Stories Online.
When you sign up to be an EPP, extra podcast person to Real Ghost Stories Online, you'll have access to the best ghost stories we've ever told.
The oven doors started slamming open and closed. And in places like this, oven doors take up entire walls.
Never before had I seen such clear evidence of something non-human being in a room with me.
Because it felt like somebody was here. You know, you see I Did It written in paint, where you just paint it.
These are stories only EPP members have access to.
I don't know why, but I just wonder if that scream isn't a family member that was there to claim their loved one.
There was like something standing there right in the threshold of the doorway, and I was paralyzed. I couldn't breathe.
It's only $5 a month when you sign up at realghoststoriesonline.com by clicking Become an EPP.
There was an old lady standing at the foot of the bed, and she said she could see details and everything. You know, it just looked like an old lady standing at the foot of the bed.
You'll get access to the best ghost stories and exclusive video content we've ever created.
I have no doubt in my mind that it was completely supernatural.
But it felt like it was in my head. Like, it didn't feel like I was hearing it. It felt like it was in my head.
Become an EPP now and help keep our show on the air. At realghoststoriesonline.com, click Become an EPP.
Welcome to Real Ghost Stories Online. Call in your real ghost story now at 855-853-4802. Or write in at realghoststoriesonline.com. You are about to enter the world of the unknown, and quite possibly, the undead. This is Real Ghost Stories Online.
That indeed it is. And on today's episode of Real Ghost Stories Online, a listener shares her obsession with a local town and its legends. After leaving her childhood home, a woman finds that no one else has stayed there for more than 3 months. Well, out on a jog, a man finds the gentleman he just passed disappeared. A listener finds that her sleep paralysis has now expanded into her waking hours. Those stories and more today on Real Ghost Stories Online. Tony and Jenny Brisky joining you once again.
Hello.
Is it really, can it be classified as sleep paralysis if it's during the day?
No, but what she's talking about is she started out with just having sleep paralysis, and now she's finding she's having other experiences during the day that's not necessarily a sleep paralysis.
Mm-hmm. Definitely kind of ties in, though, to what was going on.
Yes.
In the paralysis stage.
Paralysis. Okay.
Is that, that's not the right, just, it's like geese. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's okay. Not geese's.
It's not geese's. Geese's. Look at the flock of geese's over there.
Uh-huh.
There you go. All right. Well, okay. I'm interested to hear what goes on with the sleep paralysis. This is maybe ghost geese or something. Have you ever had ghost geese on any stories? I don't recall geese. That's an interesting. I could see that happening. Although you never really know what if it's real or not. Just if you have geese around a lot and you see them flying over, that'd be creepy. It's like every single year I hear the flock of geese flying over, but there's no geese there.
Uh-huh.
The Ghost Geese.
Murder of Crows.
A Lifetime original movie.
A Murder of Crows that aren't there.
A Murder of Crows?
I just wanted to say A Murder of Crows, because that's just weird.
A Murder of Crows.
Mm-hmm.
The Danny Bonaducci story. It'd be interesting. There you go. That's another Lifetime original. Let's go to our first story. Sarah writes in, hey, Tony and Jenny, it's Sarah from Illinois again. I had commented on your Facebook Live video about Alton, Illinois. Instead, I'll write in more about the town. Never been there, but I've always been fascinated by the history and the stories from the town. It's a short drive north of St. Louis. I'm planning a trip there soon with my ghost hunting friend, so if something happens while we're there, I will write in again. I've had stories from three different places in Alton. The first is of the Mineral Springs Hotel on East Broadway, which is no longer a hotel. It opened in 1914 and closed in 1971. So reopened in the late 70s as an antique mall and now has a few small shops. There are many ghosts that have been reported over the years, such as the drunk ghost who earned his name when customers and investigators would smell alcohol. They'd know him. They'd know it's him. His name was Charlie, and he was a guest at the hotel in the 1930s. He was unable to pay for his lodging and his bar tab and offered to paint a mural of Alton on the wall in the Crystal Room to pay for his debts. Owner agreed, but Charlie passed away before he could finish. He not only is known to bring the odor of alcohol, but he's also known to fellow women around. However, he is a gentleman and will go away when asked. There are numerous spirits reported in the basement of the hotel. One of a young girl who likes to play with marbles, one of an older man believed to have drowned in the pool. There are sounds of splashing and wet footprints that have been seen on the floor. This seems normal for a pool area, but as I said earlier, the building has not been a functioning hotel since the 70s, so the pool hasn't had water in it for decades. Most compelling ghost of the hotel is the Jasmine Lady. She's named this due to the jasmine-scented perfume that people have smelled when in the hotel. Her story is a sad one. I don't know the year, but she and her husband were guests at the hotel, and while they were there, she became romantically involved with another guest. Her husband walked in on them and became enraged. The Jasmine Lady reportedly ran away from him and supposedly tripped, falling down the stairs, and instantly dying from a broken neck. There are conflicting stories on whether she fell or was pushed by her husband, but she has been seen on the staircase and has been seen falling down the stairs. It was also the first Unitarian church. It was built on the site of the St. Matthew's Catholic Church, which burned down in 1905. The most well-known ghost is a former pastor, Philip Mercer, who for unknown reasons hung himself in the church in 1934. He was found by his friend hanging in the doorway of one of the Sunday school classrooms. He'd been dead for at least 24 hours prior to his discovery. The original church was a station on the Underground Railroad. There are many, many other stories linked to the church from the original 1800s Catholic Church and the current church. There are so many other stories from Alton, most of which I don't know enough about to give you a good story. There's a mansion called McPike Mansion that was featured in the show Scariest Places on Earth. That's all for now. Thank you for reading my story. Can't tell you how much the show helps my workday fly by. Have a great day. And as always, stay spooky.
I think everybody kind of has that spooky town that they think about, or, you know, they just kind of have a, I don't know, they envision in their mind when you're talking about creepy towns.
Sure.
You know, and they usually have their fair share of legends.
That sounds, that town sounds like it's loaded.
Yeah.
With a lot of really, really good ones. Mm-hmm. That'd be an interesting place to wander around. What town do you think of when you that comes to mind when you hear ghost stories? Or
Leadville a lot.
That is an odd town.
Yeah, I don't want to go back there, but I think of it a lot.
We did have a little bit of an experience there, mm-hmm. in Colorado. We were walking down the sidewalk, and what was going on? Our older little one was looking at something.
Yeah, the house that we walked by. It was very obviously an old house. Mm-hmm. It was right on Main Street. I think it had some kind of plaque. It belonged to somebody who was important back mm-hmm. in the day. And she just looked at me. She said, "Do you think that house is haunted?" And I said, "I don't know." And the next thing I know, her glasses have flown off of her face like she's been hit from the side mm-hmm. and are sliding across the concrete sidewalk. And the thing is, if she were to hit these glasses, the hand she would have had to hit them with to make them go the direction they went was the hand that I was holding. Mm-hmm. And I didn't hit her. And then she just looked at me and she was ready to go. I think we were all ready to go.
Did she think that you had, like, bumped her or something? Or
no. But she just kind of looked in shock at me. She was like, "How did that happen?"
That was odd.
It was very odd.
And the timing.
Yeah, so I think something was saying, yeah, it's haunted, so.
It's haunted, there goes your glasses.
There we go.
Yeah, so, yeah, that's creepy. I'm trying to think of what my go-to ghost town is that I picture things in mm-hmm. when, you know, when we tell a story or something, and you put something in their mind. I don't really know for sure what that is. I think it really depends on the setting of the story. I guess a town that I kind of put myself in a lot, like, would be like West Bend, mm-hmm. You know, in Wisconsin. That it's always been a town that's been interesting to me, even from when I was little. It's just kind of it's a well kept up downtown, mm-hmm. But very historic and very old looking. And I always thought that was so neat. And it was neat to go on the ghost tour there a couple of years ago at night. So I guess it's kind of like my American town that fills in those blanks.
Sure.
Kayla writes in. My story takes place when I was 10 to 12 years old. I was living in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, on the north side. The home I lived in was built in 1900. It was my stepfather's home. My mother and I had moved in, and I remember I had to sleep on the couch in the living room until my room in the attic was finished. All we did was repaint it. Back in those days, it was okay to leave your kids home alone for a little bit of time. I came home from school one day, and my mother had to run out to the grocery store, so I was by myself. We're sitting there watching TV in the living room. Then I heard what I thought were footsteps slowly going up the stairs. Chalked it up to nothing, but then it happened again, probably about 45 minutes later. Nobody was home. Just me. Didn't have any dogs or cats. Later that same week, my room was finished, and I finally had my own room to sleep in instead of on the couch. Now, what I'm about to tell you happened every single day until I moved out of the house at the age of 12. Be awoken by what sounded like three knocks on wood. My room's walls were brick. There was no other wood in my room. Didn't even have the headboard on my bed. The only wood that was in my room was my dresser, and there wasn't a door at my bedroom at all. The knocks had happened in my room continuously and only stopped when I was fully awake and out of bed. This happened every single day, and it was always the time when I had to get up for school. I don't know what it was or who it was, but apparently it didn't want me to be late for school, so I'm guessing if it was a spirit, it was a pretty good one. I finally moved out of the home 2 years later. We got in contact with a realtor, and she was able to put our home up for sale. Maybe about 1 month after that, she was admitted to a psychiatric hospital. We didn't know why, but it was pretty odd right after we moved out. Now, a happy 33-year-old wife and mother of three searched for my old home online, and that's how I found it. It was built in 1900. Couldn't find out anything else, as if anyone has died in it or who even built it. But look at the home now. It's pretty sad. It's dilapidated. And it had a three-tier backyard, which included the roof of the garage that we all used to play hockey in that had apparently burned down sometime. The yard is all overgrown. The yard is all overgrown, and the beautiful wooden stairs that went all the way down to the lower level of the yard is overgrown with weeds and just looks terrible. It's hard to believe that it's only been about 17 years and we left the house beautiful and stunning. Now it's for sale. And no one will buy it because no one will stay in it for longer than 3 months. Everyone moved out. As far as I can find, my family will want to really stay there those 2 long years. Thank you for hearing me out.
I think it's always sad when you find out that the home you spent time in your childhood isn't doing, it's not being kept up and taken care of. But I find it interesting that nobody else has been able to stay in that house for any period of time.
Yeah.
That's kind of a dead giveaway that something's going on with that house.
It makes you, you know, either, you know, you guys were really, really brave or accepting or patient, you know, with what was going on, or things have increased.
Yeah.
Quite a bit. But that is sad to see when that happens to properties. It really is amazing, though, if you've ever been in a situation where, you know, you're at something, or whether it's a home, whether it's you know, a business or a restaurant or something that you frequent, and then it closes, or you move away, or what have you. How quickly nature will retake something if nothing is being done with it.
Sure.
And people are not involved to keep it up. It really doesn't take long at all for something to start looking really scary really fast. I mean, I'm just thinking of one of the creepiest examples that I think I've ever seen of it firsthand was when we were in Wichita, the Joyland amusement park. Because that, if you were to see the pictures of it today or whatever is left of it, online you can see pictures that were taken a couple years back and video, and you would think this thing had closed down in like 1980 or something by the way it looked. But no, it shut down in like 2008, right around there, 2007, 2008.
Right.
I had just moved to town at the time, and they had done a promotion with the radio station, and it was an up and functioning park. Now, was it the best, you know, shape at that point in time? No, it was probably a little bit run down, but it was functional.
It was functional until the day they were supposed to open, they condemned the roller coaster.
Yeah, that's true. We had a morning show. They're supposed to ride it all day as like their stunt. And then like an hour before they were supposed to start doing the stunt. The city comes in and condemns the roller coaster. And the look on the host that was supposed to be doing that was like, oh my God, I was just about to ride that thing like all day long. Uh-huh. And the park was all about it had it not been condemned.
Right.
And it wasn't just like we need to pause this for further inspection. No, condemned.
Yes.
It means like, no, never.
Nobody ever rode it again.
No, it was eventually torn down. And But just seeing that from being in its state to then gone, it was like, oh my God. There's another amusement park in Wichita too that it happened to. Wild West World.
Yes.
That, and a lot of that was disassembled and moved around. Mm-hmm. But there were parts, you know, the front gates, the theater that's out there. I've seen pictures online because I looked it up just curious as to like what's in the theater today.
Uh-huh.
And people have gone out there with cameras.
Really?
And it's sad. I mean, it was a vibrant little thing.
Oh, I know. I know all too well.
Yeah. Paint, the way paint peels, the way plants can start infesting themselves.
Yeah.
It's amazing. So there you go. I don't know why I got on that tangent, but it's amazing how quickly things can revert back.
Mm-hmm.
So Jeff writes in, hi, Tony and Jenny. I want to share a story about a man I saw while jogging. There's a road of Guam, a road on Guam that I used to run. I didn't have any volleyball or tennis practice. Everyone calls it the Fire Station Road because it's right next to the fire station. The road leads 1.5 miles up to a gate that used to be a housing area for the military, but now it's just a ghost area that's locked up. This one day, I decided to go run early at 4:30 p.m. because I had a dinner to go to that night. Normally, people start parking around 5:15 or 5:30, so of course, when I arrived, no one was there. I began my run at 1.5 miles later. When I reached the gate, I began my run back. Before reaching the road bend, I saw an old man. He had a woven hat holding a tall wooden cane, sleeve-cut shirt, brown cargo shorts. He was really tan with defined wrinkles on his face, a long gray beard and eyebrows. I thought to myself, to someone else who decided to come early. A few feet before I was about to pass him, we made eye contact and noticed how his eyes were. I took off one of my earphones and said, hello. He said, hello. You're out running early before the crowd. We smiled at each other and I continued my run. Before the bend of the road, I had a feeling that told me to turn around. I really didn't want to because I just wanted the run to be over with. Something pulled me to turn, and what I saw just made me run even faster. When I turned around, there was no man there. All I saw was the gate. Couldn't have been more than 50 feet by the time I turned around. I got to the parking lot. 3 cars were there. The drivers were just coming out or stretching. Did a quick stretch and went home. Began to wonder if I beat my personal time, but I was too shocked at what just happened. I still went back, but I wouldn't run until a few cars would be there. No one is allowed to build a house in that area because it is still government property. There are military cops that drive up and down on the road a couple of times during the afternoon. Wonder if anyone else who runs or walks early sees him.
I don't know if anybody else has seen that same person, but I know we have a lot of people that are out jogging on their own or, you know, biking on their own, and they come across unusual things. And it's usually either first thing early in the morning or at dusk.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know why the time of day plays a part in that.
I don't know, but that is a kind of a common thread.
Mm-hmm.
When I used to go walking by myself at night when I was like 18, I would wander out of my apartment. This was in Wausau. And I would take this neat little trail that would go down by the river. And I'd wander that. And it had street lights on it. So it was, you know, it was lit up. And in summer, you know, it was light. But not so much in fall. And I never had anything really happen. But there were times where you'd think you'd hear somebody back behind you a bit. I mean, we're talking a town that's really not crime-ridden, you know, or anything like that, but you know, it's creepy.
Sure.
You know, if you think you're out there by yourself, and chances are, if there was somebody, they're probably just doing the same thing I was doing, just going for a walk at night. But oftentimes I would see no one. So to see someone was a little, you know, disheartening or scary, if you will. And other times it'd be like an animal, you know, or something. It's amazing how noisy a squirrel can be.
Sure.
You know, sometimes, especially even here, we'll be out on the deck and I'll start hearing really what sounds like loud rustling.
You sound like you swear it's Bigfoot.
Well, yeah, or a deer or something. Like, gosh, there must be like a large deer right down there, or a wolf or something. And then I start looking around and just this little squirrel and hopping. Mm-hmm. And then the hopping and landing on all the leaves
is what sounds like footprints.
Yeah, exactly. It's just, oh, God. Okay. Jared writes, and this story I'm about to tell you was relayed to me by a friend of mine who's a demonologist, a longtime pagan in northeastern Ohio. I'll say as a precaution, do not do too much research into the property beyond what is needed to validate my story. How about this? I won't do any research.
I didn't do any either.
Okay. We'll just take this as a story and not really reveal. They don't like reveal the location in this, do they?
They say the name of what it is. I took the address out.
Okay. When I get to that point, I'll make the call if I want to say the name or not.
Okay.
Something about the negative energy there seems to draw people to it, especially those who are sensitive. And honestly, I feel slightly sick relaying this message to you, which is something I've experienced by merely looking at photos of the property. First, let me give you some background on the property and its dark history. The house, which stands at the originally built area sometime around 1900 to 1905, was designed by a local architect. It was built as a hall or a German social club who formerly met each other at the locations nearby. Later, the building and its several additions would go on to the Cleveland Hebrew Institute. There's also reason to believe that the location served as a hospital for Hungarian Jewish immigrants seeking refuge from oppression during World War II and possibly a speakeasy during Prohibition. It was also relayed to me by a friend that there was evidence of an ancient order of occult worshippers who had taken up residence there. Where most of the confusion lies is when the building actually became the funeral home. John Walker Wills, who owned it, was born around 1875. He was one of Cleveland's most prominent black entrepreneurs of the time period. Ran a series of funeral homes with his partner under the name of Jean Wills around 1907. That partnership dissolved and the business just became Wills and Sons. Many sites list the fact that Wills owned the building as early as 1905, but other sources say the business was actually housed at this address starting in 1942 and spanning to 2005. During that time period, the location served as not only a lavish and amazing funeral home, but also as a meeting place, even being used as headquarters for civil rights movement meetings, as Mr. Wills was quite active in the cause. The building also served as a home until Mr. Wills' death. Died in an upstairs bedroom in April 23rd of 1971. House stood abandoned between 2005 and 2010. It was a rough neighborhood, so the elements, as well as vandals, took their toll on the structure. In 2006, a man was shot and bled to death on the front doorstep of the house, making him the last confirmed death at the address. Then, in March of 2010, a local artist purchased the home, in hopes of restoring it for the purpose of art shows and exhibitions. During this time, that building hosted a number of paranormal investigation groups eager to seek out claims of the paranormal. The house is home to reports of phantom footsteps, strange mists, and shadow people. Visitors have claimed that disembodied voice calls their names out to them. In one incident, someone reported an energy vortex in the old casket room. Others see a full-bodied apparition of a gentleman dressed in a suit, possibly the ghost of Mr. Wills himself. The story doesn't end there. According to independent research done by my friend, there have been a few priests and rabbis who have attempted to cleanse the property but were later found dead due to unknown causes. There are even a few amateur paranormal investigators who had spoken to my friend about the property and their investigations there and have claimed to have had bad things happen to them after the investigations. One had his home mysteriously burned to the ground, another wrecked his car twice in the same night, another had six pets that died of unknown causes within the course of 3 months. That they constantly want to keep going back to the location to investigate as if they are addicted to the property. Final straw in all this came when my friend, who's a longtime practicing pagan of about 40 years, and is one who told me of all this, was physically stopped from researching further into the property by an unseen force that sternly told her no. She believes it was her spirit guide stopping her from putting herself in a place where she would be beyond help. In her opinion, what is there isn't human nor demon, but a portal of pure darkness and evil. And frankly, from what I've felt only reading about the place, I am inclined to agree.
You know, I wonder with this particular place, if it was haunted before it was a funeral home, or if it was only after it was a funeral home that it became haunted.
I don't know. I mean, it sounds like with all the things that, that kind of came and went through the place, I wonder if, you know, the seeds of something dark were sowed there early and something stirred them up later. Maybe the funeral home.
Sure.
All the emotions and all that stirred some of that up. If earlier it was used for bright activities, and then you have a place that ends up having a lot of sorrow and a lot of emotions added into that mix, it's like putting Miracle-Gro on demons.
Okay.
Or something really dark, you know?
Really feeding it.
Yeah. So I wonder if that's, it was just kind of like perfect storm of shit. Perfect shit storm.
Perfect shit storm. Okay.
Really? Of darkness. The perfect shit storm of darkness. The soundtrack by John Mellencamp.
It's a shit-nado.
So I wonder if that's what may be going on there. But yeah, it's not like a lovely place to visit. Mm-hmm. I don't think I would want really anything to do with going there. So thank you for the story. Samantha writes in, "Hi, Tony and Jenny. I've written to you both before, and you shared your story on one of your EPP episodes, and I was more than thrilled. I have another story to share, but it's not mine. It's my mother's. When she was younger, she had her own room in her parents' house. They had a ranch-style home with the bedrooms at one end of the home and the living room and kitchen at the other end. She has two older sisters that also lived in the home at this time. One night, she went to sleep on her waterbed. At some point in the middle of the night, she heard her bedroom door open. She's a very light sleeper, so naturally she woke up. She looked over at the doorway and saw a girl who looked like her sister Tammy standing there. She said in a groggy voice, 'What are you doing up? It's the middle of the night.' Figured didn't say anything and just walked over to her and sat on the edge of the bed facing away from her. My mom spoke again, 'Seriously, Tammy, it's the middle of the night and I'm exhausted. Unless something is wrong, just go to bed.' Figure sat there for a few more seconds and then just got up and walked out of the room, shutting the door behind it. My mother mumbled, 'The hell was that about? She's such a creep,' and thought nothing of it and went back to sleep. She woke up the next morning and walked out of her room, heading towards the kitchen. She sees Tammy sitting in the living room watching TV. She walked to the kitchen and went into the living room and asked Tammy, 'What were you doing in my room last night? You were acting so creepy. Did you have a bad dream or something?' Tammy turned and looked at her confused, and Tammy says, 'Kimmy, I don't know what you're talking about. I wasn't in your room last night. I was asleep and just woke up half an hour ago in the same position I was in when I fell asleep.' Mom says, 'Tammy, stop messing with me. You say it. You were on my by my bed and I saw you.' And Tammy just kept denying it. She swore to my mother that she didn't leave her room, and if she wanted to scare her, she could find more creative ways to do it. It's nothing too crazy, but this for sure gave me goosebumps when she told me. There have been other odd happenings in the house. I'd love to share them with you guys, so I'll write in soon. I'm a proud EPP member. Listen every day. Keep up the amazing work, guys."
You know, we haven't had one in a long time, but I think that might be a doppelganger story.
Yeah, it makes you wonder.
Mm-hmm.
The thing I could think of would be like some sort of, you know, sleepwalking possession or something weird. I don't know. But that's the difficult part of that, to know whether that was some sort of sleepwalking.
Yeah.
Is there any way to, did I miss anything in there?
I don't think so.
Verifiable that she never left her bed?
Well, she said that she woke up in the same position she had fallen asleep in.
Sure. Still, I mean, you could go.
You could, but, you know, sometimes you just know.
Yeah. Yeah. I wonder if it is a doppelganger in that story. I would love to hear more of those stories that you said you have, so please do share them. We greatly appreciate that, and thank you for being an EPP. If you guys want to be an EPP, you sign up on our website, ghostpodcast.com. It's where you get all the bonus episodes of our show. 110-plus of those up there, exclusive video content. We have our episodes of Seeing Ghosts, where we share ghost video and images, and it's creepy as hell. Also... Of course, the episodes that have fallen off iTunes, those are up there as well. So all in all, like 400-plus episodes you can just binge away on. So check that out. Tanisha writes in a follow-up to my story, which was included in EPP episode 89 called Getting to Know You. After I wrote to you the first time, I had another night terror and nightmare episode a few days later. My family, we refer to them as episodes because they are so frequent. I'm happy to say it's been over a week since the last one, and I have been sleeping pretty good for the most part. I considered writing to you immediately after my last episode, but I've actually been struggling with myself as it relates to discussing the paranormal. Definitely don't want to have demons, as I call them, visiting me just so I can write. Wondered if my night of hell was caused by me listening to your show. I do think that listening to the show and hearing others have similar experiences to mine made me more open to activity. And just so you know, I am a storyteller, but I've always written comedy, not ghost stories or paranormal stuff. I think because the paranormal topic was always a little too close to home, I never thought of it as entertainment and preferred to ignore it as much as possible. Until, of course, I stumbled across your podcast. Anyway, after listening to you read my letter, I found myself thinking how totally ridiculous the whole thing sounded. I, like most people, probably listen to others tell their stories and think sometimes either they made the shit up, are crazy, or were high off of something. Personally think that the truth-false ratio is probably around 90-10, which is really not that bad in my opinion. I admit I'm far from an expert. I'm just using my own instincts and experiences and stories I've heard from people close to me to come up with that number. But after hearing how crazy mine sounded out loud, I'll try not to be so judgmental. So with the story, after the event I wrote in of before, as you would expect, I've been a little scared to go to bed. Can you imagine how humiliating it is for a 40-year-old woman to not want to go to her own bed? My fiancé gets home late, so I'm usually asleep when he comes in. So for the first night after, the night of hell, I slept in my youngest daughter's bedroom to avoid sleeping alone. I did not have any problems that night, so the next night I slept in my own bed. Again, I slept okay. Following night, I stayed up watching TV, too scared to get out to go to sleep, of which I avoided until my fiancé was home. Just as I lie beside him, beginning to doze off, I felt like something jumped on me with force so hard it was an attack. Imagine being totally relaxed and someone just sneaking up on you and jumping on you. We're thinking that it felt like the entire bed had moved, but my fiancé did not stir, which was weird. With every fiber of my body and will in my mind, I tried to move and yell, but was completely paralyzed. Never had a night terror, if that's what this was, like this. In the past, I've had them and can feel right before they're about to start. Everyone I know who's experienced them describes them in the same manner, pretty much. But no, not this. This was different. As I continued to struggle, I began to pray the prayer my Catholic fiancé taught me, but I only remembered part of it. In this sleep-awake state, I said, "In the name of the Father and the Son, I command you to leave," repetitively. I don't know how many times I said that, but I know that after a while, I truly got kind of pissed and angry. I started to feel like I was being bullied at school, and this thing was trying to make me its bitch. I actually felt this thing touch me close to a personal part of my body. With this feeling, instead of fear, I felt the last time, I was completely and utterly livid. With all the strength I could muster in me, I shouted, "Get out! Get out of my house! You don't belong here!" Just as abruptly as it had jumped on me, it vanished. I then looked over at my fiancé, who was in a deep sleep, and wondered how he could not have heard all of the grunting I must have been making. We've been sleeping in the same bed for over 2 years, and he always wakes me, and I have a little occasional little episodes, which he describes as me whimpering and crying in my sleep, but in my mind, I'm grunting and hollering. He heard absolutely nothing this time. I then realized that this is something that I have to rid myself of somehow, some way. The next day, when I got home, I smudged my house with sage, a tradition some in my family follow, and I've not had a problem since, and for the record, I don't plan on it. I refuse to be bullied in my own home and will let no entity have power over me. What my mother always told me is that they long for what we have. They long for the life that we often take for granted. Life is truly a gift, which is why when it is thrown away via suicide, those spirits almost always linger. I know there are numerous things unseen that walk the earth, and some have been cursed to see some of the evil ones. I personally have never seen a ghost, but my sisters who are twins have. Some of my family members have seen orbs, some angels, doppelgangers, and things that look like little trolls. I thought some of those stories were ridiculous, but now I know anything is possible. On several occasions, shared dreams, like the one in my other story, have occurred with family members. In closing, I did want to say that Jenny brought up a valid concept, which I've been analyzing after hearing you read my story, and that's the fact that only the females in my family have had the night terror episodes. None of the males have ever admitted to experiencing anything close that I'm aware of. Then again, they are men, so men are less likely to admit that something like that. Another thing I want to share is I think there's some sort of correlation between sleeping with the windows open and spirits wandering in. We're coming to that conclusion after analyzing my experiences in the past. So I'm keeping mine closed and hope that continues to help. And by all means, I'd like to tell people to please never open a door if you hear knocking and no answer. I know that should be basic, but even if you don't see anything, you could be inviting in a spirit. Sounds pretty stupid and vampire-like, but my stepfather once did that. And afterwards, all types of paranormal shit kept happening in my childhood home. That is yet another story. Anyway, thanks again for the paranormal therapy. I'll share more stories that have nothing to do with me presently, hopefully, in the future. P.S. If this shit happens again, I'm not writing a damn thing and will probably start back going to church or something. Best regards, Tanisha.
You know, she brought up spirits coming in through an open window.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and not that long ago, we had a story where it was a hospice center. And if the patient passed away and the window, they didn't open it after let the spirit out, that the nurses kind of freaked out.
Yeah, it was almost like a superstition, if you will, that they had going on there.
Yeah, so if you believe that you need to open a window to let a spirit out, I could see that also being a way to let a spirit in.
Mm-hmm.
Not saying don't open your windows, but I wonder if there's something to that.
There's a vice versa. Mm-hmm. Effect to it. I think that's valid if that's something that people have some sort of experience with.
Sure.
So it was interesting. The other day we had a question about, and I think of windows, so this really wasn't a window-related story. It just sounded like a window was open or a patio door was open. And that's going back to the Richard in Chattanooga story from years ago. And I had someone who asked me about, what episode was that on? And I don't think I'm going to find their message, but I can kind of reiterate what they said back to me. They said that they had listened to the episode, and right as I don't know if they listened to the episode or they had found it, and right as they had found it, something had happened in their house. It was unexplained, where it was like some sort of weird sound, and they felt sick. Right when she was looking for it, because I don't think she listened to it. I think she said, maybe I'm not going to listen to this after all.
Okay.
But it's just such a weird thing with that damn episode where people experience things, they say they feel things, and then this even just getting close to it, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Like, well, that's interesting.
It is.
So, I don't know. We still have yet to ever hear what whatever happened there. Will writes in, about 8 years ago, I was living in an apartment above a longtime family-owned business. One night I was awoken, but had no idea why. Please know that I've never in my life woken up from sleep during the night. Never woken up to use the bathroom, drink water, ever. After sitting up, I looked straight ahead out of my bedroom door and saw a black shadow figure in the shape of a tall man standing in the living room staring at me. We stared at each other for a good 8 seconds before it walked, not vanished, out of the room. Wish I could prove it wasn't a dream, but I just don't know for a fact. I was wide awake. Beyond the occurrence itself, it was strange that I felt in no way scared. I was almost indifferent. Staring. The cocked head as a dog would. I would never see it again after that night. One evening later, on that week, I was out with friends describing this event when in an instant, very suddenly, I paused. My mind went racing back to a suppressed and long-forgotten memory when I was about 6 years old. I remember shockingly vividly of a moment spending the night at my grandma's apartment, the second of only two apartments above the business. I was getting ready for bed, my grandma already deep asleep as she usually was. When I went to use the bathroom, as I turned the corner, I noticed what I remembered was the very same shadow figure staring at me from the next room. Being the young native child I was, I went running after the figure, but walked away the same exact way it would 15 years later. Naturally, as any story would go, the figure was nowhere to be found after I ran after it. I assure you I was a swift enough kid to not be outran by a walking person for just that. It was incredible. That memory arose out of nowhere to be recalled about my visitor. I came back to reality and excused myself from my friends and went home claiming I had stuff to do, but in reality, I just needed time to reflect on the situation. After many hours of thought, I came to the conclusion that it had to be my late grandpa, who passed before I was born, and who, of course, lived there in that building with my grandma for 40 years or so, checking up on me. I believe he was watching me, getting to know me as closely as he could, calming me when I saw him, and making sure I wasn't afraid. My grandpa was a great man and never hurt anyone, a loving man I wish I met in the flesh. That's it. I enjoy the show. Hope I can make it in a nearby episode. Just found the podcast and I'm listening in order. I'm only in episode 11, but I'm getting there. Keep up the good work.
I wonder how often it is that a shadow person will show up and it ends up being a family member.
I think quite often. I think that's where it's don't judge the shadow by the shadow.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think if you can tell who it is, it's almost kind of sad, you know, because I think if you envision having a ghostly encounter with a lost loved one, you in your mind imagine that you're going to see them the way you remember,
mm-hmm.
not as a shadow.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's kind of almost sad.
It is, because I wonder if they are aware of how they're coming across.
Mm-hmm.
And if they're like, why are they afraid of me? You know,
sure.
Like, I'm just here to play Parcheesi, you know, mm-hmm. and they're like, the family's freaking out, thinking the devil's down the hall. I could see that being very confusing until eventually you realize, oh, God, I'm projecting myself as this scary-ass figure.
Mm-hmm.
But what do I do to change that?
Right.
And eventually you figure it out and you make some pottery. It's really amusing.
Have you ever sat down and watched that movie?
Ghost?
Yeah.
No. I don't think I have anyway.
Okay.
If I have, I do not remember watching it. I may have at some point in my life.
Okay.
Have you?
No.
I just know there's that scene.
Yeah, everybody knows that scene, but let it go. Don't bring that show up again.
Let it go.
Stop. No, don't do
let
that.
Let it go. I'll make Frozen references. Now, that movie I have seen probably more than I really care to.
Yeah.
But it's Norwegian, so it's not bad. Makes it all good.
Okay.
Goes back to the homeland. There you go. That wraps up today's episode of Real Ghost Stories Online. Thank you guys for listening. If you're not an EPP yet, hey, help us stay on the air. Sign up to be one. Ghostpodcast.com is where you do that. You support the show. You keep us on the air. And you get a lot of bonus free stuff. You get all the bonus episodes. At this point, like 112, 113 or so of them. All the episodes that have fallen off iTunes, if you like the show. There's a lot of those, too, including some really interesting interviews about The Conjuring, Amityville, and a heck of a lot more. That's all in our archive section. That's on our EPP website, ghostpodcast.com. So check that out. Until next time, for Jenny Brewski, I'm Tony Brewski. Thank you for listening to another episode of Real Ghost Stories Online.